Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 23rd, 2015. The IGAD summit in Juba is postponed again.
The partners will have to join us in pledging their continued support because we cannot leave it only to the South Sudan leaders and the people of South Sudan in the implementation.
And South Sudan Army begins relocating its troops out of Juba town. But who is monitoring the exercise?
SPLA headquarters is deploying ground force from Juba, starting with 250 that are heading to Mogiri, a distance of 25 kilometers. Mogiri is the first location because it has a presence of water and some shelters.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A head of state summit that was supposed to be held in Juba this week has been postponed indefinitely. South Sudan's foreign ministry says the meeting was put off for logistical reasons. The summit was to discuss the financial and technical support for the South Sudan peace deal signed by the warring parties in August. For VOA News, Philip Donaleu reports from Juba.
This is the second time the summit was delayed. Initially, it was scheduled to take place last week, which has been postponed to this week. Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Mawen Makolari says this week's summit was put up because of tight schedule for several IGAD heads of state and other government leaders.
The ESP accession of South Sudan will take place on the 30th of this month. Then it's going to be attended by the president, of course. And then there are advancing that are going to go in between here, plus other logistical reasons.
Once it is finally held, the summit will be attended by the leaders of Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia and Sudan, along with other IGAD leaders. Armed opposition leader Riek Machar is also expected to attend, but has yet to return to Juba. Seyoum Mespin, the chief mediator for South Sudan's IGAD-led peace process, says a new date will be announced soon. He told South Sudan in Focus that the summit is not only important for the implementation of the peace agreement, but for the leaders of the two warring parties to accept responsibility for the suffering that occurred during the 21 months of conflict.
First and foremost, the South Sudanese actors will participate in this process here in Juba, which would enable them to pledge to their people in the presence of IGAD leaders and the partners that they show remorse that what happened to their country for the last 2 years has been a very devastating one, and they don't want to look into the back. They want to pledge that they are leaving this behind them. They will declare that they have concluded this chapter of violence.
Mespin says regional and international leaders will also be called on to provide financial support for the implementation process at the summit.
So also the partners will have to join us in pledging their continued support, because we cannot leave it only to the South Sudan leaders and the people of South Sudan in the implementation, because it goes beyond their capability and capacity. A huge resource, technical support, financial support, material support is required.
President Salva Kiir emphasized that point in a speech to Parliament last week, in which he said partners to the peace deal must offer their financial support if the peace deal is going to be implemented. Those partners include the United States, Norway, the United Kingdom, and China. Also during the summit, IGAD head of states and regional governments are expected to inaugurate the office of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body tasked for monitoring the permanent ceasefire. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
The South Sudan Army today began redeploying from Juba in accordance with the peace agreement signed in August between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to end nearly 2 years of conflict. According to the security arrangements stipulated in the peace agreement, only a force of 4,380 will remain in Juba to provide security in the capital. All other forces must be redeployed 25 kilometers outside Juba town. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre told reporters in Juba today that the first batch of more than 200 SPLA soldiers are being relocated from Kiada military headquarters in Juba to Mugiri, 25 kilometers out of the capital.
This has started today by SPLA headquarters redeploying ground force from Juba, starting with 250 that are heading to Mugiri, a distance of 25 kilometers. Mugiri is the first location because it has a presence of water and some shelters. The rest of the location will continue as the government is providing life assistance to those areas, particularly provision of water and shelters.
Aguer says the government army is committed to implementing this provision of peace agreement.
The SPLA is 100% committed to the peace agreement and particularly to the ceasefire. And we'll see into it that Juba is left only with 4,380 forces. That is according to the security arrangement and the ceasefire.
According to the security arrangements stipulated in the peace agreement, there will be 3,420 forces from the government and 1,410 from the SPLA in opposition. The units that will be allowed to remain in Juba include the ceremonial guard, a military band and logistical battalion. The redeployment of forces outside Juba is expected to last 3 months, which was supposed to begin from the time of the signing of the peace agreement. But Aguer says the exercise may take longer than planned.
The process was meant to continue from the signing of the ceasefire in September up to December. But unfortunately, due to delay in Addis Ababa, this process may take longer because it was meant for 3 months. I believe it will not be beyond December. By end of December, most of the process of redeployment of forces, creation of camp or encampment should have be completed by the end of December.
Aguer calls the security situation relatively stable, even in states most affected by the conflict.
In general, the security situation in South Sudan is relatively stable. For the last 72 hours, there is no any reports of clashes in Unity State or Upper Nile or Jonglei. We hope the situation will continue to improve until we 100% implement the ceasefire.
The rebels of the SPLM in opposition are accusing South Sudan Army of attacking rebel positions in eastern Equatorial State. Deputy military spokesman for the SPLA in opposition, Colonel Dixon Galwak, says his forces in Pagiri came under fire from the South Sudan Army. Government spokesman Michael Makui told VOA over the weekend that government troops are fighting rebels who attacked a bus on the Juba-Nimule Road last week, leaving 3 civilians dead.
Our forces are under one unity of command and they respect the signed peace agreement. I don't see any reason why they should attack and loot the properties.
Where are your forces based in eastern Equatoria?
Our forces, we base in eastern Equatoria and also we are in western Equatoria. If you look at it, our forces are in Pagiri. And remember, on Sunday and also on Saturday, our forces came under heavy attacks by the government troop in eastern Equatoria. And the government is trying to advance, you know, to our position, and which is, if you look at it, this is a real violation of the peace because our forces are in Pagiri, eastern part of Pagiri, in eastern Equatoria, and they attack us recently, which is a clear violation of the recently signed peace agreement.
And the government is saying they attacked your positions because you ambushed a bus on the road to Nimule, killing 3 people, and they are saying they want to ensure that the road is secure.
This is very untrue, and it is very unfortunate that the government should have such accusation. If you look at it, this is the government forces who are fond of looting civilian properties in the area, attacking them and burning down their houses. If you look at it, why should we attack it? And our forces are not, you know, are not in a position of attacking or committing, the civil population properties. This is not us. These are government forces. You know, in Juba, the economy is really getting down and everybody is frustrating.
This is not also coming from the government only. Some international aid agencies in Upper Nile and Unity State have said on several occasions that your soldiers do not respect civilians.
this is not true at all. If you look at it, Tanza, our forces has been really, you know, they have been really respecting this peace agreement. We don't have anything to do with harassment. If you look at our position now, if you go to Unity State, where we are, if you go to Upper Nile, we don't have any such harassment. It is the government forces that has been carrying out those atrocities.
And how do you make of the incident where a UN badge that was carrying civilians was commandeered by your troops? And it was reported that you took fuel from the badge and arrested some nationals, South Sudanese nationals, who are just civilians on the badge.
I think you're supposed to ask the higher management of UNMISS, because we are really blaming the United Nations mission in South Sudan of poor coordination. Because if you know that by that time we were expecting the enemy, you know, moving from Malakal toward Rang in the same direction, and the UNMISS had a poor coordination with our office. So we were blaming the UNMISS by then because they did not have a good coordination with our office.
And after you learned that it was a UN badge, you still went ahead and took fuel from that badge?
After long investigation and after further investigation, that is when we realized that the badge was from the UNMISS. And from the initial part, we were really having a doubt on it, because remember, we have some evidence, because there were some guys that we got, and these people were traveling from Juba. Even if something went wrong, I think the blame is supposed to be on United Nations mission in South Sudan.
That's Colonel Dickson Galwak, Deputy Military Spokesman for Rebels Loyal to Riek Machar. He was speaking to me from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, earlier today. The United Nations mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, says it is investigating an incident today in which a UN peacekeeper from Rwanda was shot in the capital. The details are sketchy, as we hear from VOA fellow Tito Justin.
UNMISS Public Information Officer Santel Passad in Juba says the incident happened about 10:30 a.m. this morning at UNMISS military barracks. Passad says she doesn't know the severity of the gunshot wounds or where the soldier was hit.
We are investigating the circumstances around the incident, so we can't speculate at this point how he obtained the gunshot wound. But an investigation is currently underway.
Passad says the unidentified Rwandan soldier is being treated at UNMISS Medical Clinic in Juba. According to a community leader of the IDPs at the Protection of Civilian Site, Kobom Kobom, many IDPs at the camp are saying the UN peacekeeper was shot and killed by a fellow peacekeeper today. Kobong says that report has not been confirmed.
Romo from the street said that there was incident within the peacekeepers. One of the guys killed his friend. But when we try to verify it through different sources, there is still no clear information regarding that.
There are 12,553 UN peacekeepers serving in South Sudan from several different countries. Among them, 11,350 are troops, 179 are military officers, and 994 are formed police units or police officers. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
Authorities in Ikotos County in eastern Equatorial State are investigating an alleged gang rape by SPLA soldiers. The report comes after soldiers arrested and allegedly tortured local youth who were accused of attacking a military barracks a week earlier. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from WOW.
Residents say following the attack on the military barrack by angry youths, several soldiers moved into Ikoto town, beating residents and looting their houses. They say after the attack on the barracks, the soldiers also cut off all telecommunications to the area. Now, women in the area say they are afraid to come out of the bush and search for firewood or fetch water from clean water sources after hearing that one woman was gang-raped while looking for firewood near the barracks about a week ago. A woman who did not want to be identified says women in the area live in fear.
No way, we are fearing, we are scared. The one which was raped, she was moving on her way, then these people were also patrolling. Then they raped them. It was at night. When they raped that woman, they also beat two women also.
Paramount Chief Lodongi Joseph says He has been told by residents that soldiers stationed in the area beat up people and looted their houses following the attack on their barracks. Joseph says he was also informed about the alleged gang rape and says he is working with the military officials to identify the suspects and bring them in for questioning.
Then I came from there yesterday, actually. I got that information. I went to check for the woman. That woman was not actually there. And now, right now, I'm now in police. I don't know whether they have reported the case to the police.
Joseph says it is wrong for the military to step in and act as though they are police officers by arresting and detaining people.
I think the right people to keep law and order, these are the police. But now, right now, it is now the soldiers. The soldiers are the one doing that now.
County Commissioner Peter Lokeng denies local soldiers raped any woman. He adds that his office has not yet received any official complaint about the alleged incident.
I'm very sorry to hear that news about raping. We never experienced any raping in Ikotos County.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer also says he has no knowledge of a gang rape by soldiers, but at the same time says he hopes that the area military commander will discipline the soldiers if there is any evidence that a rape occurred.
If it is a quarrel between the military, then the commander of the unit should solve it. If it is a quarrel between the military and civilian, then definitely again the civilian authority and the military command will have to sit and see how to resolve it.
Commissioner Lokeng says the area is now calm. He is calling on youths who fled the town in fear of being arrested by the military to return to their homes so they can help with the ongoing investigation and to resolve the tensions between the area residents and soldiers. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau, Western Baal Ghazal Estate.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Pope Francis prepares to visit Africa. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
If you pray, what do you pray about?
I pray about general things. Basically for health, long life, you know, God to give me the strength and the enablement to be able to look after my children. I also pray for others too.
First, I pray for a brighter future and I pray for God's strength to conquer my biggest worries and troubles.
I pray for good health and pray for my children, my parents, and the country.
I will pray for peace in our country. I will pray that God should really help us, so therefore God should come and help us in South Sudan by bringing peace. This rampant killing of people at night, robbing people on the way, should stop.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Chinese government has donated $5 million to the UN World Food Programme to combat South Sudan's deteriorating food security. A WFP official says the money has come at a critical time when aid agencies are looking for all the financial support they can get to save lives of people who are going hungry. For VOA News, Wakis Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
WFP's spokesman in South Sudan, George Fomian, says the money will be used to provide food to hundreds of thousands of people who rely entirely on humanitarian assistance.
This donation will go to support our response to the crisis-affected people in the three states which are the most heavily affected by the conflict in South Sudan, that is Upper Nile, Jonglei, and Unity States.
According to several international aid agencies, at least 2 million people have been displaced from their homes and are in need of food assistance since the conflict erupted in South Sudan in December 2013. A latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, analysis estimates that 3.9 million people face acute hunger in South Sudan, including about 30,000 people who are facing starvation in hard-to-reach parts of Unity State. Fomian says the Chinese government's donation will be used to meet the immediate food needs of those types of vulnerable people.
The funding coming from the government of the Republic of the People's Republic of China is particularly going to food and nutrition assistance. And so we would use these funds to purchase cereals such as sorghum, pulses, which we deliver to the people in need, as well as oil and salt, and then distribute to people who are in need.
Despite a signed peace deal which includes a permanent ceasefire, both SPLA government forces and rebel forces led by former Vice President Riek Machar have waged attacks on each other in parts of Unity State. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
When armed gunmen barged into Radisson Blue in Bamako last week, it was not just an attack on a luxurious hotel in the Malian capital. Katharina Hodge reports for VOA that the target the attackers chose symbolizes regional and international interests in Mali, a move that threatens foreign investment and stability.
Radisson Blue was considered one of the safest hotels in Bamako. Among its guests were diplomats, presidents, and foreign businessmen looking to invest in Mali. At the time of the attack, a group of Chinese investors from the China Railway Company building the railway from Bamako to Dakar was staying at the hotel. The flight staff from Air France and Turkish Airlines was also there. Political analyst Issa Ndiaye says there are many reasons why the hotel was targeted.
C'est un concentré d'endroits où
The Radisson was the perfect target for multiple reasons, one being the many foreigners that frequently stay at hotel and the ISS. The Radisson is where international investors meet and business deals are signed.
L'attaque du Radisson, ça va dire que ceux qui veulent venir vont réfléchir à plusieurs fois.
And the ISS says the attack will have foreign investors think twice before they invest in Mali. Two West African militant groups, Al-Qaeda and Islamic Maghreb, Akim and his affiliate Al-Murabitun claim joint responsibility for the attack. Al-Murabitun, the creation of former Al-Qaeda leader Mokhtar Belmokhtar, took to Twitter and called the attack an act against Mali and France. The group claimed a similar attack on a hotel in Sèvres, a garrison town a couple of hundred kilometers north of Bamako. 17 people were killed in the August attack on that hotel, which was frequented by staff with the United Nations mission in Mali. While Al-Murabitun has the capacity to commit such an attack, most analysts in Mali point to another Islamist extremist group. Ansadin, headed by prominent Tuareg Yad Agagali, has recently expanded its territory by cooperating with the Messina Liberation Movement, active in the country's center and south. The United States and France consider Ansadin a terrorist movement. It has close ties with Al-Qaeda in Islamic Maghreb, Akim, and was excluded from the peace negotiations between the government and northern rebel groups. Behind the group's radical Islam that would impose Sharia law in all of Mali, our political and financial interests, says Professor Hamidoun Magassa, who studies Islam and terrorism in Mali. He says group leader Yad has been involved in every rebellion in Mali since the 1980s. He is an influential voice in the north, and behind him you have Akim, which in fact controls all the extremist groups, Magassa adds. The attack was a power demonstration by the attackers and its allies, says Issa Ndiaye. He fears more attacks will follow. This was the second attack in Bamako targeting Western interests by Islamist extremists this year. In March, an attack at the restaurant in Hippodrome, a neighborhood where many NGOs and foreign businesses have their offices, killed 5 people. Katrina Hoye for VOA News in Bamako.
Pope Francis is to begin his first official visit to Africa this week as he travels to Kenya. The pontiff is expected to address climate change, interreligious and interethnic peace and poverty when he arrives on Wednesday. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Streets are being paved, banners have been hung by the highways, and Pope Francis-branded merchandise is for sale. All to welcome the pontiff when he kicks off his Africa tour in Kenya. Kennedy Agesa is a tailor living in the Nairobi slum of Kangemi.
We heard the rumors Pope is coming. We are very happy.
Pope Francis will be visiting Kangemi during his visit. Advocating for the poor has been a key tenet of his papacy. In his native Argentina, he was referred to as a bishop of the slums. Father Simon Peter Kamomoy is a priest at Nairobi's Holy Family Minor Basilica. He says the Pope is the right person to speak about poverty.
Many Kenyans, a good number of Kenyans, are going through difficulties. And so when they see the Holy Father now living a very simple life, you know, he is now identifying with the poor, with the people who are suffering.
Pope Francis is scheduled to speak with young Kenyans during his trip. And if this visit is like previous ones, he will likely urge them to work together, dream big, and above all, have hope. Kangemi resident Luke Kariuki thinks this message will resonate with young people here. He says some youths will be welcome to the church. Some will change their lifestyles. Those who have been abusing drugs, they will change. The Pope is expected to address climate change, having previously said the underprivileged are disproportionately affected. Catholic Relief Services, Kenya and Somalia country representative Lane Bunkers, says climate change is particularly harmful to those whose livelihoods are dependent upon agriculture.
When the weather patterns change significantly, where we have these extreme seasons of drought or seasons of heavy rains, this has an impact on the smallholder farmer.
Pope Francis is also to meet with different faith leaders, an important gesture in a country that has experienced its share of interreligious and interethnic violence.
Because the Pope addresses humanity, you know, not just the Christians.
But along the way, Pope Francis may find that he picks up a few new converts, like Kennedy Agesa, who says he is currently a pagan.
Maybe when I see him, I'll change.
The Pope spends 3 days in Kenya before leaving for his next destination, Uganda. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A heads of state and government summit that was supposed to be held in Juba this week has been postponed indefinitely. South Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry says the meeting was put off for logistical reasons. The leading mediator for IGAD, which brokered the deal, says the summit will focus on the need to financially and technically support the peace agreement. The United Nations mission in South Sudan says it's investigating an incident today in which a UN peacekeeper from Rwanda was shot in the capital. Details are sketchy, but an unmissed public affairs spokesperson says the incident happened at 10:30 this morning at a military barracks. She says she doesn't know the severity of the gunshot wounds or where the peacekeeper was shot in the capital. And finally, the Chinese government has donated some $5 million to the UN's World Food Program to help feed thousands of South Sudanese on the brink of starvation. A WFP official says the money has come at a time when aid agencies are looking for all the financial help they can get to save lives. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. And we now leave you with the song Mama Ama by Colonel Mido. We've been listening to Colonel Mido with that song, Mama Ama. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.